Hello, everyone, and welcome to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader today. I hope you enjoy the articles I have for you today. The first article is, Some People Are Always Late. Science Can Explain Why. Are you a multitasker, a free spirit, or an overly optimistic planner? Experts say that these are some of the traits that explain why some people are always running behind. It's by Daryl Austin. If you're one of those people whose I'll be there in 5 reliably turns into 15, you're not alone, and you're not necessarily careless or inconsiderate either. Most of us have been late at some point, but some people find themselves constantly running behind. That discrepancy often begs the question, why do some people seem wired to be late while others treat punctuality like a personal law? It's a question that has puzzled behavioral scientists for decades, and the results have at times seemed contradictory. For example, a 2003 human performance study found no statistically significant link between chronic lateness and any one personality trait, suggesting punctuality isn't necessarily a matter of any individual character flaw. But newer research paints a more nuanced picture involving psychological tendencies, internal clocks, and even biological differences that appear to nudge some of us toward promptness and others toward delay, often without any of us realizing it. Jeff Conte, Associate Chair of Psychology at San Diego State University and one of the leading researchers on punctuality, has spent years studying these patterns, including the 2003 study. He notes that while lateness doesn't always map neatly onto any single trait, the preponderance of evidence now shows there are individual differences in personality that relate to chronic lateness, a view echoed by other behavioral researchers. And understanding those patterns matters more than we might think, since punctuality acts as a kind of social glue, signaling respect for other people's time, shaping relationships, and supporting coordinated systems of everything from workplaces to transportation to healthcare. When you agree to be somewhere at a given time, you're essentially entering into a contract, explains Pauline Whalen, a Pennsylvania-based psychologist who teaches workshops on procrastination and chronic lateness. But if one person is consistently late, it creates a breach of trust, not just for the moment, but often for the entire relationship. Here's what the latest research reveals about the most common drivers of habitual lateness, and how to adjust if any of them sound like you. The optimist, the planning fallacy. Psychologists Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky first coined the term the planning fallacy in the late 1970s to describe our tendency to underestimate how long a task will take, even when we've performed it many times. Basically, the planning fallacy is the belief that one's own plan will unfold perfectly, says Alan Bluedorn, a distinguished professor emeritus of management at the University of Missouri and author of many time management studies. Most people demonstrate it, and they demonstrate it much more for their own plans than when estimating completion times for others. But while most people show this bias, some experience it significantly more than others, and still others have not yet learned to compensate for it. Though there's no empirical evidence directly tying the people who exhibit the planning facility to chronic lateness, research is clear about the mechanisms behind it. The first is intuitive. Misjudge task duration, and you'll leave and arrive later than intended. It leads to the prediction, almost a truism, that the more people demonstrate the planning fallacy, the more likely they are to underestimate their departure times and hence be late, Bluedorn says. Additionally, research has consistently shown that people who underestimate task duration, especially for tasks that feel comfortable, tend to assume they can personally speed up each step. As a result, they leave too little margin for real-world delays, increasing timing errors that often translate into late arrivals. What can you do about it? To counter the planning fallacy, Rochelle Issop, a New York-based productivity consultant and author of The Order Expert's Guide to Time Management, suggests simply doubling your initial time estimate for getting somewhere. If you think something will take 10 minutes, she advises, make it 20 to give yourself a buffer. Next is the free spirits, low conscientiousness. Among the five big personality traits, openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism, conscientiousness shows the strongest and most consistent link to punctuality, as individuals who score high in it have been shown to be more likely to arrive on time. This is because conscientious people tend to be responsible, goal-directed, and disciplined. Reliable and attentive to details, explains Geraldine Joachim, a clinical psychotherapist based in West Sussex, England. The trait is so important that one 2019 meta-analysis found it to be the single best non-cognitive predictor of overall performance in life. Dwana Ballard, an associate professor of communication studies at the University of Texas at Austin and author of Time by Design, explains that conscientious individuals naturally build the habits, preparation, structure, planning, that lead to early or on-time arrivals. Conversely, she says, if you score low in conscientiousness, you struggle with time and task management. This is, in part, because lower conscientiousness is associated with disorganization, reduced follow-through on planned actions, and weaker self-time monitoring, all of which directly interfere with consistently arriving when intended. What you can do about it? To strengthen conscientious habits, Issop suggests adding visible cues to make you more aware of time, such as getting in the habit of wearing a wristwatch or placing analog clocks around your space. Joachim adds that a better understanding of how your tardiness affects others can also shift motivation. Recognize that lateness can be perceived as disrespect, she says. Number 3, the jugglers, polychronicity and multitasking. If you love multitasking, jumping between emails, cooking, and texting, you might be naturally polychronic, meaning you prefer managing many tasks at once, rather than sequencing them. While this can be beneficial in creative or relational contexts, the tendency has been shown to undermine timeliness. For instance, there is research showing that people high in polychronicity arrive up to 15 minutes later, on average, to scheduled commitments than those following a monochronic, one thing at a time, style. Conte explains the mechanism. Polychronics tend to prioritize relationships, socializing, and whatever comes up at the moment, putting a lower priority on rigid schedules. Ballard adds that this is what drives behavior in polychronic cultures, such as many regions of Latin America or the Middle East, not the clock. In such places, someone would never abruptly end a conversation to be on time somewhere, she says. It would be seen as rude and inefficient. The irony is that in monochronic cultures like the U.S. and Germany, or Japan, or even within families or organizations where punctuality is highly valued, that approach can read as the opposite of what a person intends, painting the individual as inconsiderate or irresponsible. What you can do about it? If you live or work in a culture that values relationship first timing, being more flexible isn't inherently a flaw, and you may not need to fix anything. But if lateness causes problems in your environment, Conte recommends setting alarms at the time you need to leave, since polychronics often get waylaid by last-minute interactions, and an alert can give you a helpful out in a conversation. Next are the night owls, chronotype and circadian misalignment. Everyone's internal clock runs differently, and people with a late chronotype, often called night owls, naturally fall asleep and wake later. This often affects their punctuality because society largely runs on morning-oriented schedules. So this mismatch creates what researchers call circadian misalignment. If you're a night owl, most of the world just isn't built for your rhythm, Ballard explains. Not only is there a mismatch, but chronobiology research shows that night owls often experience delayed melatonin release, making early mornings feel cognitively sluggish and physically taxing. This often results in taking longer to kick into gear because the hormones that propel us to wake up aren't fully present when having to rise unnaturally early, Joaquin says, and hitting snooze leads to rushing, and rushing leads to lateness. But night owls aren't just late for their morning meetings. Circadian misalignment has also been linked with impulsivity and scheduling struggles that extend into the rest of the day. These are among the reasons studies show night owls being more likely to miss deadlines, underestimate preparation time, and experience greater day-long variability in alertness, all factors that heighten the risk of lateness beyond just the morning hours. What can you do about it? To help night owls adapt, Issop recommends preparing everything the night before: clothes, bags, lunch, keys, etc. So mornings involve fewer decisions. Joaquin suggests multiple loud alarms and waking up 60 to 90 minutes before important departures to allow the brain time to boot up. A caveat is these strategies help during inflexible periods such as school terms, early shifts, or travel. but Ballard notes that if your daily schedule is the issue, the best solution is to find a job that fits your circadian rhythm. Next is the distracted, biological and ADHD-related factors. For many people, the root of lateness is neurobiological rather than personality-driven. For instance, individuals with ADHD, autism, dyslexia, and related conditions often experience what researchers call time blindness, the sense that time passes differently or less predictably than it does for the rest of us. Time blindness makes it difficult to gauge the passage of time, Ballard explains, and can therefore lead to losing track during transitions or becoming so absorbed in a task that time disappears entirely. Research supports this, as individuals with ADHD frequently underestimate time intervals and struggle with the ability to plan and execute tasks that have a looming deadline. Other studies show similar timing irregularities across other neurodevelopmental conditions, such as autism spectrum disorder, dyslexia, dyspraxia, and certain executive function disorders, any of which can disrupt time perception and task sequencing. What you can do about it. To help with biological-related tardiness, Ballard recommends enlisting a partner, co-worker, or friend for accountability during transactions or transitions and to perform a task alongside you. Issop suggests using digital checklists to keep track of commitments and building travel time directly into your calendar so it becomes non-negotiable. Setting the clock. Never too late to improve. In the end, even lifelong latecomers can improve punctuality, especially when they focus on improving the specific area that might be holding them back, rather than willpower alone. To do so, and even to tackle tardiness broadly, Conte emphasizes structural adjustments, such as early alarms and giving yourself longer buffer periods between commitments. Issop encourages working within your strengths rather than attempting a complete overhaul by leaning into systems that genuinely suit you, like visual timers, verbal check-ins, or preparing items well in advance, rather than forcing strategies that don't match your natural tendencies. And you don't have to make sweeping changes all at once, she says. Improving just one piece of the process can make a noticeable difference. She also recommends the practice strategy of listing each step required to get somewhere, such as driving time, finding a place to park, and the time it takes to get from your car to where you'll be meeting, and assigning realistic time windows to each as you plan ahead. Doing so gives you a clearer sense of what needs to happen and when, she says. And the responsibility doesn't fall solely on late people. Those who are naturally punctual can also reduce conflict by recognizing that others experience time differently, and by building a little flexibility and compassion into shared schedules. Personality traits aren't personal, Ballard says. If someone doesn't share the trait that makes punctuality easier for you, understanding their priorities and perspectives can help reduce conflict. And that completes the article. The title was "Some People Are Always Late. Science Can Explain Why," by Daryl Austin. This next article is titled How Your Cat Experiences the World. Cats use the same 5 senses as humans, but they view the world differently. Understanding them could make us better cat parents. It's written by Carrie Arnold. The world, according to cats, is very different from the one we travel through. To walk in a cat's paws, we first need to understand how a cat experiences the world. Although cats use the same senses as humans, sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, they understand and process their inputs quite differently. But knowing they have some tantalizingly similar senses to ours can help us live more harmoniously with our furry friends. So on Happy Mew Year for Cats Day, learn more about how your cat works and maybe sense a better connection. First of all is sight. Like humans, cats use their vision to see the world around them and to hunt down their next snack. But differences between human and cat eyes mean that they see the world quite differently. Although a cat's precision pouncing in the dark may make it seem that she has built-in night vision goggles, cats do need some light. But though a human's light, night vision, is iffy at best, the dark is a cat's time to shine. Millions of years of evolution have made it more likely that many cats will be active and hunt at dusk and dawn. Light enters the eye through the cornea, the round transparent surface of the cat's eye. The cornea focuses light on the retina, which lines the back of the eye on the inside. A cat's cornea is large and dome-shaped, letting cat eyes gather the maximum number of photons, a key adaptation to their low-light living. Cat pupils are long and vertical, narrowing to a slit in broad daylight, but expanding up to a 300-fold when it's darker. Human pupils grow only 15 times bigger. The back of a cat's eyes has a layer called the tepetum lucidum, which reflects unabsorbed light back into the retinas, an adaptation to help the cat see in dim light and causes eye shine, that glow that can be seen when light shines on them in the dark. Their peripheral vision is also better than ours. Other aspects of feline vision are not as sharp. Because their retinas have fewer cones, the photoreceptors that perceive color, cats are thought to see the world less vibrantly and in fewer hues than humans. Next is sound. A cat's triangle-shaped ears act like small furry satellite dishes. Their ears flap, or pinny, can independently rotate forward and backward and sideways to zero in on a sound's location. The pinny's 180 degrees of rotation mean that the cats can pinpoint the location of a sound to within several inches in just 1/600th of a second, faster than the blink of an eye, from up to 3 feet away. They can also distinguish extremely subtle differences in sounds, even as little as 1/10th of a tone. But their ultrasonic hearing, far superior to humans and even dogs, doesn't mean that Beyoncé and Beethoven are to a cat's musical tastes. Smell. Smell, unlike the other 4 senses, is fully developed straight out of the cat womb. The newborn kitten quickly uses its nose to navigate through to the nearest nipple and get its first sip of nourishing colostrum and milk. Experts believe that a cat's sense of smell is about 14 times better than ours. a domestic cat's olfactory epithelium, the specialized tissue in the nose containing the receptors that detect odors, is 5 to 10 times larger than a human's. As a result, cats have up to 200 million specialized cells that detect smells, compared with our mere 5 million. Our feline friends have another tool at their disposal, the Jacobson's organ. Tucked above the mouth, receptor cells in the Jacobson's organ connect to the part of the brain associated with sexual, feeding, and social behaviors. If cats smell something interesting, they will partially open their mouths and curl their upper lips, an expression called the Flamen response. This shoots air molecules to the Jacobson's organ. The inhaled air is trapped on the olfactory epithelium and or the Jacob's organ, giving kitties an extra chance to detect scent molecules. And lastly, touch. Whiskers on kittens may be our favorite things, but cats really depend on them. Known formally as a vibrissa, a whisker is longer and thicker than normal cat hair. Each of a feline's whiskers grow from a follicle packed with nerves and blood vessels, making them as sensitive as human fingertips. These vibrissae help to compensate for a cat's less than stellar close vision. They detect subtle air movements that can indicate the presence of prey and help cats navigate around obstacles. Now that you have a better understanding of how cats walk through our world, your feline friend might make a little more sense. And that's the end of the article titled, Here's How Your Cat Experiences the World. And that ends the broadcast today. You've been listening to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and thank you for spending your time with me today.